as aid from all parts of the world is being rushed to victims in the Indian Ocean tsunamis, questions are being raised about why there wasn't a system in place to warn people in that part of the world that the tsunamis were coming. Why was there no early warning system? The Pacific region has such a system, but scientists at the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center in Hawaii could not get the news to officials in Southeast Asia fast enough to save lives. So we're going to start the hour by talking about tsunami science and prediction. Even if an early warning system was in place, how accurate are tsunami predictions? Would people take them seriously if they turned out not to be so predictive? Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Harold Mofiel is the senior scientist for the NOAA Tsunami Research Program at the Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory in Seattle. He joins us today by phone from Seattle. Welcome to the program, Dr. Mofiel.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
If there had been a better system, do you think we could have saved lives?
Oh, undoubtedly.
Why isn't there a system then?
Well, probably because there's not a history of deadly tsunamis in the Indian Ocean, recent events that would prompt people to put such a system in place.
And why is that? And why could you have a period of so many years where nothing happens and then whack, such a disaster?
Well, I think that's typical of subduction zones in which oceanic plates subduct under underplates. Very often, the recurrence interval for the earthquake can be even hundreds of years. But in the Pacific, we have so many subduction zones that typically we get about 4 tsunamis a year, one of which is deadly.
So you have one plate diving under another, and it sort of locks up for a while until it releases the strain, and then you have a big earthquake and a tsunami.
That's correct, and there's no way to know when that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. What is the system like? Describe it for us, that's in place in the Pacific.
Sure, I'd be glad to. It consists of earthquake sensing equipment, seismometers. There's a global network of those. There are tide gauges on the coast and offshore that actually measure tsunamis directly. In the United States, we have 2 warning centers, each one of which receives that data in real time. That data has to be analyzed by experts and a decision made as to whether to call a tsunami warning or not. Then there has to be a communication system in place that goes through emergency managers all the way to the affected public. So there are a number of different components of this, all of which have to work in order for the system to be effective.
Were you able to, in your center and other places that watch for earthquakes and tsunamis, did it show up on your computers that a large earthquake had happened in the Indian Ocean region and there was a tsunami that was going to happen?
Just a little clarification. Our group provides support for the operational tsunami warning centers.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is try to make those systems more accurate and quicker. In terms of centers themselves, yes, they were able to detect the earthquake and make first estimates of its magnitude and location.
And why were they not able to get the word out quickly enough to warn people?
I really don't know the details on that, but if we look at how hard emergency managers and NOAA works in order to develop an efficient communication system, which includes periodic drills and updating equipment, it's quite a task to put such a system in place. And one of the problems with tsunamis is that when one occurs, you only have minutes or hours mm-hmm. of time available for people to evacuate.
So you really need to have like the old Conelrad or air raid sirens in practice and practicing the evacuation all the time.
Certainly might be effective. There are NOAA weather radio, which is used, for instance, for tornado warnings in the United
right.
States. That's implemented for tsunamis now in the Pacific region.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the emergency alert system, and some coastal counties actually have automatic phone dial-up.
Right.
Messages to residents in the area.
And seeing as how many cell phones there are now, you'd think there'd be enough people, even on beaches, who could get a phone message.
Well, there is that, and there is a prototype public address system now in place at one location on the Washington coast to tell people directly on the beach that they need to evacuate. The basic thing is that people have to get the message soon, and then they have to know what to do about it. And that's where education is so important in terms of tsunamis.
Do you think there's going to be a change of mindset in the Indian Ocean area? Or is there, are people going to say, it's too expensive, we've had our once-in-a-100-year tsunami, we'll forget about it?
There might be some to think about. I really think that there is going to be a system put in place.
And who would pay for it?
I think that, you know, since tsunamis ignore national boundaries, it has to be an international effort. And all the countries in the region, as well as the developed countries, have a stake in this. So I suspect it will be collaborative.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of video footage on television about the actual waves coming ashore. But we didn't see, for the most part, what would be that we've heard about the typical 30-foot wall of water. We basically saw the water rising very quickly. Did we just miss that, and because anything that was in its way was wiped out?
Well, I think the tsunami acts very differently depending on local conditions. Mm-hmm. And in many places, the water receded first away from the shoreline, and then surged forward to the beach. You can almost think of it as like an instantaneous flash flood with high water velocities coming at you. But a 30-foot high wall of water is probably hard to come by, and certainly the videos show that it was less than that in a lot of places the initial wave. But it doesn't take a lot of water moving fast in order to knock people off their feet, for instance, or lift up vehicles and slam them against buildings.
1-800-989-8255. Let's get some calls from our listeners. Patricia in Buffalo. Hi, Patricia. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. My question is about the fact that I heard that the Earth was knocked off its axis by several degrees because of the power of the earthquake and or the tsunami. Could you explain what this is and what it bodes for our future, weather-wise, climate-wise, or any other changes?
Sure. Actually, what happened was a much smaller effect than that. Over time, as plates build up stress against each other, they also cause a local distortion in the shape of the Earth. And when the earthquake happens, that releases so that there's a redistribution locally, in this case near Sumatra. Because of that, it has to do with like a skater spinning and pulling their arms in, for instance. You get a change in the rotation rate, but it only amounts to a few microseconds. So the actual phenomenon was much less than that in terms of the effect on the Earth. The change in momentum associated with the seasons in the atmosphere has much greater effect in terms of the Earth's rotation.
So the Earth's tilt was not affected in any way?
There's a small, you know, relative to the gigantic size of the Earth compared to, you know, the 1,000-kilometer fault, it's a small effect. It doesn't mean that it wasn't a huge tsunami or a big earthquake, but relative to the Earth as a whole, it's relatively small.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I wonder how much other misinformation, the more the story goes, the more we're going to hear, you know, misinformation about the effects that, you know, that had on the Earth, not about the terrible loss of life, but, you know, the exact physics that went into this. Have you heard any other kinds of things that you know, that you might want to, like the Earth being knocked off its axis like this
sure.
one?
Yeah, well, I think that was, you know, an excellent question, and there's definitely misinformation or a variety of ideas out there. And it's sometimes you hear something and, you know, it might seem plausible, but, you know, there is a lot of information going up on the web now by authoritative sources. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the place to look, you know, consider the source.
Tell us how tsunamis are different from normal ocean waves. I mean, we all go out and we watch the waves coming in the shore. What makes a tsunami so powerful and so different?
Sure. There's a lot of energy there. And I certainly love to go to the beach and watch the waves come in. First of all, it's how they're made, how they're generated. In a case of waves that we see at the beach, typical waves, those are generated by the winds, storms offshore, and the trade winds in the tropics. And they have periods of about perhaps 20 seconds or less. In the case of a tsunami is an ocean wave as well, but it has a much longer period, the amount of time it takes for two successive crests to pass each other. And that those are of the order of a minute or of, up to an hour in duration in terms of the period. They're also generated by a different mechanism. They're generated by geological events such as earthquakes, landslides, volcanic eruptions, and over geological time, meteor impacts on the Earth.
So in this case, the land just lifted up so quickly off the ocean bottom, it just pushed the water up, and the water had to then run downhill, and the rest of the rest of the world, wherever it was traveling.
Sure. Part of it went up, and part of it went down. Where it went up, it formed very rapidly a wave crest, and where it went down, it formed a wave trough. And then once that wave is formed, then wave dynamics propagates that wave elsewhere. In the case of the event off of Sumatra, it was a long fault that went, so it created a linear wave, which unfortunately was aimed toward Sri Lanka and India, as well as the east coast of Africa. But part of it also went up toward Thailand.
If you were a boat on the ocean 100 miles from it, let's say, and in between it and Sri Lanka, would you see a wall of water? Would you know anything different was happening in the ocean under you? You know, this wave traveling at 100 miles an hour, hundreds of miles an hour?
Yeah, if you're in deep water, then you probably wouldn't even notice a tsunami coming by. What happens, though, is once the wave comes near shore, it moves into shallow water. And when it does, it slows down and the energy becomes more concentrated. And in that case, it becomes quite noticeable.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. You say there were about four a year that go on in the Pacific. Are they concentrated in any one part of the Pacific?
Well, it's pretty well distributed. There was one substantial one off of Japan recently, another one Peru. There have been a number of them in Indonesia. It's pretty much around the rim. It's hard to guess where the next one's going to be, but we know for sure that we're going to get some more.
Mm-hmm. And are any two alike?
Well, that's one of the difficulties in prediction, is that you can have two earthquakes, for instance, of about the same magnitude and location, and each one will generate a very different tsunami. It depends on the details of how the Earth moved up or down during the earthquake in that location.
Does there have to be a minimum size earthquake to create a serious tsunami?
It does in the sense of generating one that propagates across the ocean and impacts the other side in a dangerous fashion. So a basic rule of thumb is a 7.5 for a transoceanic event. But smaller-sized earthquakes can generate local tsunamis that can be deadly there.
We're going to take a short break and come back and take more questions about tsunamis and earthquakes with Harold Demofiel, senior scientist at the NOAA Tsunami Research Program at the Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory in Seattle. Stay with us. More phones. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour, first part of this hour, about tsunamis, ABCs of them, and what to expect with Harold Mofiel, a senior scientist at the NOAA Tsunami Research Program at the Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory in Seattle. Our number 1-800-989-8255. One question before we go to the phones. Are there other places on Earth we should be watching for that once-in-a-hundred-year locked-up subduction tsunami that might occur?
Sure. NOAA is putting in place a new warning system in the Caribbean Sea area because there's a subduction zone there and a history of dangerous tsunamis. So that's an example. in the Mediterranean Sea. Turkey has had a recent deadly tsunami, and there's a long history of them in Greece, for instance, and Italy. So, you know, there are, you know, a number of tectonically active areas around the world in which earthquakes occur underwater and therefore generate tsunamis.
Mm-hmm. Doug in Corvallis, Oregon, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. This is excellent. My name's Doug, and we've had quite a bit of visitors here in Corvallis in the last week because Corvallis has a new wave tank, one of the world's largest, which does hydrological modeling, and there are a number of people here who are quite expert about this. There have been quite a few media people visiting. But I just wanted to say I lived for a dozen years on the North Oregon coast, and we have now in place a pretty sophisticated warning system, and the fact that we are probably going to have sometime, maybe tomorrow, maybe in 100 years, an earthquake of this magnitude on our subduction zone right off the coast here has made this a pretty popular topic of conversation. But there's something that seems to me that has been missing here, that it's a very easy rule that I think we had drilled into us living on the coast where I was, that if you feel an earthquake and you're at the shore, it's probably a pretty good idea to get away from the water, to go to higher ground or to go inland. And it seems to me that if governments had just gotten this simple message to people, say, in Indonesia, where they were right near the earthquake, it could have saved a lot of lives.
Well, let's see how easy would it have been to get messages to them, Harold?
Well, in terms of you know, issues like this, is an excellent point that the caller is making, both about the value of the facility at Corvallis and the need for education. The U.S. National Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program, which, you know, funds a lot of the development work for the warning system, a large part of that has to do with educating the public as to what to do, and the caller is correct that when you have a natural warning, and sometimes that's what you get if you happen to be near the epicenter, for instance, or there isn't good communication, is that when you feel the ground shake, the water recede away from the shoreline, or you hear what sounds like a freight train coming in from the open ocean, you better get out of there. You better get away from the shoreline and to high ground or up into the upper stories of a concrete-reinforced building.
How much time would you have to make up your mind that, hey, am I hearing something? Or am I not hearing something? You know,
if you have, the caller was talking about a subduction zone event on the Cascadia subduction zone, you probably have of the order of 5 to 20 minutes to evacuate.
And you would hear that continuous rumbling.
At first, what you would do is the ground would be shaking enormously. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the predictions are that we may even get a 9.0 earthquake on the subduction zone off the west coast. The subduction zone runs basically from Cape Mendocino north to the middle part of Vancouver Island. There'll be a lot of shaking. It'll be hard to stand up. But once you know, that shaking has subsided, then people need to get away from the water.
So you're waiting for the big one out there.
Well, we're getting prepared, you know. On the East Coast, there's something called the Storm Ready Program for communities, and we have something that's analogous to that called the Tsunami Ready Program. And that provides information, lets people know where to listen for valid guidance, and also helps to develop inundation tsunami maps to give us an idea what the maximum credible event is. Emergency managers then take that and design evacuation routes and put up signage to guide people as to where to go to get to a safe location.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck to you, Harold.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a happy new year. Thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Glad to talk to you.
Harold Mofiel, a senior scientist at the NOAA Tsunami Research Program at the Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory in Seattle.